Occult Confessions is brought to you commercial-free through the generous support of our patrons. Visit occultconfessions.com and click on Donate to help keep the history of the occult on the digital airwaves. Last time on Occult Confessions, we discussed the druids through the lens of Cuculain. We considered the roles that druids played in ancient Celtic culture, namely that they were judges, or they served as heads of ceremonies, or magicians, or teachers. We also considered the important role that women played in Celtic society, and how many women were druids, fulfilling these essential societal components. We also considered the consequences of an entire culture that refuses to write anything down, even though they have a language. Now, we are back for part two of the druids. This time, we're not going to be looking through a mythological lens. We're going to go ahead and let our bard off the hook. Neil's got the day off. Instead, we are going to focus on the details of the narratives historically that have been written about the Celts that have referenced the druids. And what can we know from these historical accounts about what it was like to be Celtic and also to be druidic in ancient times? Joining me again for this part of our druid conversation is Savannah Barrett, our sister of the 84th degree.
Hello, I'm glad to be back.
And Julian Dobbs, our resident druid.
Hello.
So, Julian, before we get into this, I want to ask you some questions about this resident druid status of yours. Because this may end up being your title, who knows? They're easily assigned. Next thing you know, they stick. Savannah made one comment about Ronald Reagan. She's never been able to live it down.
No, never. So, that's my whole personality now.
In fairness, it wasn't one comment, but...
It was two. It's
the past becomes present. So tell us what it's like, what it means, I guess, for you to practice a druidic form of Wicca.
So I think I should start off with the god aspect. So in my belief and my old coven's belief, it was that, so there are two gods in the Wiccan belief, which is kind of debated because every Wiccan is different. I've not met a single Wiccan who believes in the same thing, which is kind of freeing. So there's the mother goddess and the horn god. The mother goddess usually represents like mother nature, and the horn god usually represents death. In our belief system, or I guess my belief system now, we believed that they were kind of more forces of nature than actual beings. And then all of the Celt gods are there in some aspect. But they're more of ideas than the actual belief, for multiple reasons is why we did this. For one, the Morrigan is the goddess of death, and you can't have the goddess of death and then the horned one. It kind of clashed. But in mine, we believed in Brigitte. Very good, and I hope I said that right. I never have been able to. I've been doing this for 5 years, and I still can't say the names right, which is mostly in our coven, previous coven, was the goddess of the hearth. You know, forge and stuff like that. So a lot of what we did was memorization. There was a big focus on that. Basically, how you moved up the ranks of where you were in the coven was how much you knew and how much you memorized. Which...
Very druidic.
Very, very druidic.
Yeah.
We called ourselves mostly druids, although depended on your rank. New members were usually just called Wiccans. But then once you knew enough, you went through this like rite of passage, which is very beautiful. It is one of the most beautiful ceremonies I've ever seen. Then you can be called a druid, and then we have like the master druids who supposedly know everything you can know.
Interesting. Yeah. How about trees? Anything about trees?
Oh,
in there?
So many trees.
Yeah, the oak tree.
The oak tree, but there's this calendar that we followed that. Basically, almost like every 30 days or so, there was a different tree that represented that 30 days.
Oh.
We're in ash, I believe.
Cool.
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
My favorite tree? I do like ash because it, in our coven, it meant like the coming of spring.
Yeah,
Sure. We also believed in the regular Wiccan holidays.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Why leave them aside? That's the best part.
That is the best part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the holidays and the rituals are the same for Wiccans as us. We do add a little bit of stuff, again, like ceremonies to become a druid, which they're so pretty. So they're usually done in the springtime mm-hmm. because warm weather. Some are done in the winter. It just depends on which god you follow more or the Wiccan god you follow more.
You pick one. Like a patron.
Yeah.
Like voodoo or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I specifically follow the horned one more because winter's cool.
Okay. Fair enough.
Fair enough. No, but he has like a lot of cool things. But they're usually done in the spring, and they have this giant pentacle made out of sticks, and the sticks are from different trees, from like all the trees in the druid calendar that we follow. And there's this giant altar, and there's flowers and vines everywhere. And there's this whole thing about like stepping into water and this water being like sacred, kind of like baptism.
Okay, sure. That rings true.
Yeah, kind of like a baptism thing. And then sometimes this is what really drove people away from my certain coven is that we do use blood.
Okay.
There is a certain amount of blood. So we believe that blood is very sacred. It is like the life force that drives people mm-hmm. and drives living things. So we don't use a lot of it. It's literally just a pinprick of blood, but it kind of makes up for the whole human sacrifice thing.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd rather get pinpricked than sacrificed, so.
Yeah.
Hot take.
But it's all like, you know, it's handled very safely and mm-hmm. it's all a very sanitary practice.
But people didn't like that.
A lot of people don't.
They don't like the concept.
It's more of like, there's mostly two reasons why people don't like that. And didn't want to join the specific coven. One of it is because it's blood and it's like icky. And okay. then another thing was like, it's kind of a little satanic in quotes.
I see.
And people were like, you know, they don't want to believe in sort of bad stuff. And some people associate that with blood and gore.
Satanic according to legend? Is that what the meaning is? I mean, the false notion of signing the book?
Yeah, probably. Something like that.
Okay. I know almost nothing about Satanism. I've interviewed Satanists. I've been on a Satanist podcast.
Ooh.
I mean, I wasn't hosting it.
No, I know that.
So I don't know much about it. But.
Well, Satanism is more just like atheism with a cool name, but
some of it is, but some of it
some
is occulty.
Some of it is actually
There's two variations, so I guess I don't know enough about the occulty side, and I think it has a lot of branches unto itself.
Oh yeah,
so
many.
Yeah,
everything does.
But yeah, the silly ones in the news are I think they're generally more atheists. The ones that are putting up the Baphomet statues, mm-hmm. I think.
The LaVey people. Anton
LaVey, he's the one that split at the beginning. He had that split with the atheists and the occultists. But Aquino. Anyway, we're getting off the track. Let's get into the druids here. Thank you, Julianne. That was cool.
You're welcome.
The Celtic religion, led by the Druids, remains fairly mysterious to us. There were roughly 374 Celtic gods and goddesses. I'm sure you guys don't worry about all of them.
No, we mostly stick to. Appreciate it.
Well, 305 of them were local or tribal gods, so only 33 were considered the chief pantheon, which is still a lot.
That is a lot.
But if you think about the Greek gods, I mean, there's the chief pantheon is about like 10 or so, maybe a dozen.
I think it's 12?
12 makes sense. We like 12s. But you can name gods beyond the chief 12.
That's true.
That stretch probably to about 30. 30's good.
30's a good number.
30's a good number. Celts tended to view the gods as ancestors rather than creators, and the gods behaved like idealized humans with the highest physical beauty, strength, and combat skill, and also intelligence. So they're just like Superman and woman.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The deity most closely associated with the druids was Dagda, the father of all, god of fire and lord of great knowledge. You know this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think Brigid's married to him.
It depends on who you talk to, but yeah. That's a viable, I think that's a viable line. He carries a club so gigantic that he must drag it on wheels.
Yeah, I love
Savannah's
that.
Picturing that. And it both slays and heals. So one side slays and the other side heals.
Interesting. So like he can beat himself with it to heal himself? Is
I
that
guess,
what it's
yeah,
suggesting?
Yeah, you apply it to his wound.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he doesn't need to like whack himself with
no,
it.
No, that would be terrible, I think. Yeah. No, but you could whack you with it and then heal himself with the opposite side.
Okay.
His mount is the horse Asian. And his cauldron, Undri, is a kind of cornucopia or horn of plenty that, according to Beresford Ellis, became the prototype for the Holy Grail.
Oh.
Yeah.
He named his cauldron?
Everybody named their cauldron.
We name our cauldrons?
Yeah, they gotta have names.
Oh, I just don't have any cauldrons. I
well,
guess I
once
need
you
to
get one.
Once you have one, man, oh, you gotta name
come
it.
Come up with a name. This is Bob. Yeah. He's sitting next to Jim.
Bob's
and
a
over
new name.
He's
sitting next to Linda. And
Linda's
Louise
over there. Yeah.
And Jean.
Those are the cauldrons.
Samantha.
Tina.
Samantha's nice. Druids presided over rituals. They performed a form of that Holy Grail thing. I don't want to gloss over that. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
That the legends of Arthur. I mean, we can see a lot of druidism in the legends of Arthur, but that yes. The Grail legend itself may have its origins in Celtic lore because the Grail is so associated with Christ. But the notion that Christ has a magical cup is so extra Christian, too. Like, it's not in the gospel. It's not like, and this will be the magic cup that you guys can go look for later.
Yeah.
It'd be neat if he said that.
But I don't think he did.
Yeah, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus said this.
He does the Last Supper, and he's like, oh, by the way, later you can look for this cup because it'll be fun and magic. Just tossing that in. Okay, you guys.
It's like a D&D campaign.
It literally is.
Dinner's over, but the cup will be magic later. Just remember that. It's like being in an escape room or something. Druids presided over rituals. Let's start there. They performed, as Julian's suggesting of modern druids, a form of baptism, which tied to a general veneration of water. Bodies of water which gave life, health, and food were associated with female deities, including Sabrina, Dee, and Brigantia. They also practiced walking, I believe Brigantia
is, yeah.
Yes, it's another name. They also practiced walking on fire, which was a sign of purity and was used to prove innocence in some legal proceedings.
Whoa.
If only. Mm-hmm. That would have made the O.J. Simpson trial much shorter.
It would have. He just caught on fire.
Yes, he would have definitely walked across that fire. In Scotland, fire was carried right-hand-wise around dwellings, crops, livestock, or people to ensure things would go well for them. To go the opposite direction would go against the natural order and bring down pain and trouble. At death, water and fire were both incorporated. The body was first washed and then wrapped and placed in a fuat or bier to be burned, not the beverage,
yeah,
the bier, to be burned so that evil spirits could not make use of the body.
Oh, nice. I appreciate that.
Vampire. So there's a vampire lore. Really, we don't date vampire lore all the way back to this point, but
it's there.
It's feeling like a little vampire-y.
I thought you were going to say, we don't date vampires here, but I was like...
Don't like, date well, vampires here. This is not Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, in Savannah.
Yeah, I date vampires. All right.
I did like that show. Druids likely...
Oh, well, sorry, no, I didn't...
You should
I wasn't
probably watch it now.
I probably should. I've never
you
watched
go
Buffy.
Back. Watch True Blood. There's so much you can take in. What was I talking about? You
already,
can't.
I'm already too sick. I can't
You're too
anymore.
Vampire-obsessed. Druids likely engaged in singing at both baptisms and funerals. Dead warriors and kings were buried upright, but most other Celts were laid flat. Fun fact. I don't really know why.
Wait, huh? Could you say that again?
If you were a king or a warrior, they would bury you feet first.
Oh.
You'd just be standing.
That's interesting. I wonder why.
Big hole.
Big
or
old
a deep
hole.
Hole.
What are you doing?
I don't know. Yeah, just holding it.
You can't touch it.
We'll hear that, yeah. Druids were central to the Celtic legal system. They acted as judges at legal proceedings, as well as international judges, capable of calling an end to a battle before it even began. So you'd be
damn.
Like, I'm going to start a war with Julian over there. And the druids would show up, and they'd be like, why? And you'd be like, I'm mad. And they'd be like, that's not a good reason. Go home.
You said, okay, Druid.
Oh, you would have to say,
yeah,
okay, Druid.
Yeah, you would have to say, okay,
yeah,
Druid.
They're
that's
the
Arbiters.
Cool. So they were peacemakers in that way, or they could be. They could also say, oh, yeah, I'd be mad, too.
Go fight that guy.
Julian keeps touching the mic stand.
I'm not touching it.
No, you
I'm messing with you.
Please.
Their decisions are based on a fasach, which means a legal precedent or piece of generally accepted wisdom. Like, you don't stick your finger in somebody's ear while they're trying to take a piss. We all know that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's general accepted wisdom.
Yeah.
It's exactly like that. I can't think of any good examples, apparently, at the moment. I can only come up with
that's
that.
That's the best example, Rob. So.
Yeah.
Like, don't punch your mom.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's...
Step on a crack, break your mother's back.
That's just superstition, no.
Don't kick your dog.
Don't kick your dog. People be going around breaking all their mom's backs and stuff. It'd be a mess. They pronounce the geese or glam de sin. A geese was a prohibition. Cuculin's geese was never to eat the flesh of a dog, if you remember from the end of our last episode. A glam de sin was a judgment and a curse for violating the laws of God or humanity by punching your mom or kicking that dog. And if the druids placed a glam de sin against you, you would be rejected by all classes of society.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you'd basically become like an untouchable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was the only way that could happen to you. Oh. It often came in the form of satirical poetry, so that you were mocked as your punishment was being pronounced.
I love that!
Insult plus injury equals druid judgment.
We should start doing that for people. Like, if you get arrested, everybody just gets to mock you.
Well, when you're tried and found guilty, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's what I meant, when you're found guilty.
Yeah, we'd have to rhyme, I think, to really drive the point home.
Bards should be a job again.
Yeah, we need to get back to bards.
We really do.
Yeah. We need to get back to druids.
Druids, yeah. They're the ones doing the rhyming here. A glam de sin was the end of a judicial process that often began with the trascad, in which I'm throwing a lot of terms out here, and making up pronunciations left and right.
It's okay, Rob.
I mean, these guys are gone. How would we know? Began with the trascad, in which a person who believed they had been wronged sat in front of the alleged wrongdoer's door without food until that person volunteered to submit themselves to the druidic justice system. So you went on a hunger strike.
Whoa.
But on your doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
Yeah. So if you were mad at somebody, you just go to Julian's doorstep and park it and wait till somebody was like, you okay there?
Yeah, don't starve to death on my doorstep.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to the
trial. Mean grudge.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'm eating in here. You go. You have a limited amount of time. I do not. Somebody was sitting on my doorstep.
Let's see how long you last out here.
I'll anchor you.
Anyone known to have caused bodily harm to another was responsible for paying for their recovery at a hospital or the care of the druids at home. You got home druids, so they're also involved in medical care, which makes sense. It's in sort of shamanic tradition to blend these roles.
Yeah, in Dungeons & Dragons, druids are healers.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, that's mostly what they're associated with, right, in Dungeons & Dragons?
And getting to turn into animals.
Oh, yeah, well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Both of those
cool.
work.
Druids are super cool.
You're missing a few things
they're
druids
like
can do.
They're like plant magic, though. They can also make like plants grow.
Because of the tree thing.
Yeah?
Well, we'll get to the tree thing. Where were we? So there's hospitals. Ireland's Brehon Law held that all territories had to maintain a hospital. So you would have had a hospital local to you.
Nice.
I don't even think America does that, but we should.
Nope.
Those hospitals been consolidating and closing in the rural areas.
Oh, boy.
It's a mess. It's a mess out there, kids.
The American healthcare system.
Yeah, the whole thing is
a
disaster.
Bring back the druids. They will give us free healthcare.
Yeah, it's like only like people in Denmark and stuff and Sweden are happy, I think, with their healthcare. Everybody else
Finland
is.
Finland, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good for them. You Scandinavians. We love you guys. We wish we had your hospital system. Write in if you don't like it. Yes. We're just guessing it's better than ours.
I don't think it's hard to beat, so.
An important question around Celtic and Druidic ritual is whether it involved human sacrifice. The legend of the Wicker Man. Remember the Nick Wicker Man? I just watched a Nick Cage movie last night, Dream Scenario, which I recommend to our listeners. Nick Cage was in the remake of The Wicker Man and Christopher Lee in the original Wicker Man. But this...
Not the bees.
So, this is based on true Celtic legend.
They would put someone in a big man made out of sticks?
There was a belief that this happened. Okay. Now, whether it's a myth or not is another thing entirely, but
and
they took the myth.
Bees as he was
I don't know about the bees. That's a,
as he was burning a lot.
So the myth begins with the relatively unreliable historian Poseidonis, who has nothing to do with, you know, the ocean god. It is a dude, this guy.
Poseidonis.
A historian. Poseidonis. Just writing stuff down.
Okay.
It was shared by Caesar and Strabo, both of whom drew on Poseidonis in their writing. So sort of like I do this podcast, I'll read a bunch of other people's books, and I'll read some of my own first-person narratives, and I put the show together like that. That's what these guys were doing. Julius Caesar and Strabo read Poseidonis, and then they wrote their own accounts. So you'll see the Wicker Man and the notion of human sacrifice kicking through all these different sources, but it's not like they're independently observing it. Mm-hmm. It seems to all go back to one guy.
Gotcha.
The legend held that Druids would gather cattle and other animals, as well as human beings, into a giant colossus of straw, just like in the movie. Also wood, and they would set that Wicker Man ablaze, sacrificing everybody inside.
Oof, that's rough.
The difference with the movie is this one guy in the movie.
Yeah.
But in the historic, if you look at the old school drawings of what people believed the Druids had done, this is like much later than the Druids, but people, you know, read these accounts, these historical accounts, and they would draw this giant straw man and it'd be full of dudes that they're going to light on fire. Yikes.
That's a shitty way to die.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not.
At least you're dying with your friends.
Okay. Sure.
I mean, it could be. It could be your enemies.
Yeah,
you never know.
God, I fucking hate this guy.
Can't believe I'm burning to death in a giant man.
He let me starve on his doorstep for a whole week.
And they put us both in the man. A similar story. You guys are both a pain in the ass. Get in the man. A similar story. Held that Druids would cut a man open and divine the future by reading his entrails.
Oh my god.
But Diodorus said the Druids did not perform this rite, although they may have overseen it. A more likely version of Druidic divination involves the diviner wrapping himself in the hide of a newly slain bull and laying by a waterfall to await inspiration.
Seems a lot nicer.
Yeah, more peaceful. So the theory is that some of these historians took actual druidic practices that we're more confident of and transliterated them into these human sacrifice practices. Because that looks and feels a little like the entrail thing. We still have a kind of bloody druid wearing a fresh animal skin.
Yeah.
Anyway. Druids also performed augury by divining from the flight of birds, casting omen sticks on the ground, reading tree roots or clouds, listening to dreams, or turning the druid's wheel with writing on staves of wood that would they would turn like a board game, boardwalk game, to arrive at an answer. So you, the big, you know, on the boardwalk, they have those big wheels they turn, you win candy and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what that is.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like
doing that stuff?
I think we had one, but I don't think we used it that often.
This is the wheel of... I guess it becomes the Wheel of Fortune in tarot after a time.
Yeah. We did do dream reading a lot.
Okay.
A lot of dream reading.
Yeah, that's good. Speaking of Nicolas Cage movies.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. You should watch that movie.
Dream reading?
Dream Scenario.
Dream. Oh.
It just came out, and you can watch it on some different services that I won't advertise here. But
never heard of it before.
Yeah, it's Nicolas Cage, and it's good. It's not like your standard weird action Nicolas Cage. It's like deep Nicolas Cage, like adaptation.
Ooh.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh.
Like good stuff. Weird. Strange plot, Nicolas Cage. In Marseille, a Celtic region that became a Greek colony, they practiced a version of the scapegoat rite, getting back to human sacrifice, whereby a man was treated like royalty for a year and given all the best that the town had to offer before he was thrown into the sea or stoned to death outside the city walls. Scapegoat.
I mean, it's pretty cool that you get treated pretty well right before you die. Do you know that you're going to die? At the end of
yeah,
this?
That's the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. You carry the sins of the community when they kill you. So you get to have your year, and then they used to like fatten you up, and then you carry out the sins of the community with you, and they kill you. Scapegoat.
Interesting.
It would be a goat sometimes.
Oh.
That's how we get the word scapegoat.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they treat the goat like a king for like a bit?
I don't really know how the goat worked, but it would make sense that the goat would have a pretty good year.
Yeah, like he gets to live in a bed, like, or a house, and yes. gets to sleep in a bed.
Yeah, he gets to wear pants and stuff. I don't know.
All the
Maybe not getting
wants.
To wear pants is really the good yeah. thing. This rite was performed in order to improve the town's fortunes by ingratiating them with the gods, but the scapegoat was a Greek custom, so its presence in a Celtic region that was also a Greek region makes it difficult to discern whether it was a native Celtic or imported Greek tradition. We can't really say, right? Is it Celtic or is it just a Greek thing that Celts did? A lot of us eat pasta. Are we all Italian?
Oh, I was like, whoa. What does this have to do with anything? Yes. Random. I love pasta.
A lot of us wet our fingers and stick it in people's ears, even though the Druids told us not to.
Well, that means we're going to get banned.
Not while they're pissing. St. Patrick, who had Christianized Ireland and wrote quite a bit at the expense of the Celts, whose pagan ways he sought to correct, never mentioned human sacrifice. That's an odd omission, right?
That is.
Patrick would have said something,
yeah,
you'd think.
That feels like the kind of thing they'd be like, see, they're evil because they do this.
Yes, Doug Mel Gibson said in that movie.
Oh.
A puck of something. Irish Celts were also accused of sacrificing the firstborn of every issue. But since Celts did not observe primogeniture in passing down titles and property, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Why, like, the sacrifice of the firstborn makes sense in a culture where the firstborn means something. But to the Celts, they never cared about your birth order when they were passing down property or anything. So why would they care about killing the firstborn? You see what I mean?
Makes no sense.
It's an odd accusation.
Yeah.
Because the firstborn, like, that sacrifice is only meaningful if we care.
Oh, I
see. You see what I mean?
Yeah,
but we don't
care
because we don't care about your birth order.
I gotcha.
So these are just examples of, like, why is there no human sacrifice here, or it doesn't make a lot of sense. Maybe we can buy the scapegoat thing. Maybe we can buy the Wicker Man thing. Maybe. But these are points against that being even a possibility. If there was a Wicker Man, Patrick should have said something. And if there was the firstborn thing, we would care more about the firstborn.
Mm-hmm.
Writing in 43 AD, Pomponius Mela said the Celts used to perform human sacrifice, but had since given it up. In fact, it's likely that human sacrifice ceased among the Celts in the first millennium BCE, far earlier, and is in keeping with the practices of many ancient religions, including the Mayans and ancient Hindus, who also practiced some light human sacrifice. If the later Celts performed human sacrifices, it was relatively rare, and they were likely accused of it more often by their detractors because of the Celts' widely noted practice of displaying the severed heads of their enemies and nailing skulls above the doors of houses and sanctuaries.
I mean,
that's true.
That's just metal, though. That's your enemies.
It's pretty metal, yeah.
That's not innocent people.
And they died on the battlefield,
yeah.
So those weren't human sacrifices.
Yeah.
But because they're making these gruesome displays, we come back after the fact and say, oh, well, that's because you're doing human sacrifices. You guys are too metal to not be sacrificing humans. We said to Ozzy Osbourne. On the fate of the universe and the soul, the Druids functioned as metaphysical and moral philosophers. They taught that the human soul is indestructible, and also the universe is indestructible. But at some point or other, fire and water will prevail.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Prevail?
Prevail.
Oh.
This is the teaching of the Druids. The soul is indestructible, as is the universe, but at some point in time, fire and water will prevail.
Meaning that it will destroy us?
I think so.
But it's what gives us life.
But we're also eternal. It's a paradox.
Mm.
Belief in the soul's survival was strong among the Celts, so much so that you could write a promissory note offering to pay your debts in the next life.
That's fun.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but you're just screwing over your future self there.
Well, you're being pretty honest, too. You're like, I'm poor, and I'm not really good at things in this life, but I'm going to be better at stuff in the next life, and we'll be able to afford to pay you then. Find a mechanic named Steve in about 20 years. 20-year-old Steve. He owes you $15.
That is so weird. I love it.
Gauls would sell their lives for money. Their lives, not their wives. Their lives.
Who?
The Gauls.
The Gauls?
The French.
Oh.
Not the Gulls. The Gauls. And not their wives.
Not the seagulls.
Their lives. No.
Sorry.
The French Gauls. The seagulls would sell their wives for money. The French Gauls would sell their lives for money.
Okay.
Got me so far?
Yeah.
And allow themselves to be ceremonially executed after a year in exchange for the bounty. You see what I mean?
No. I'm sorry.
So you'd be like, okay, Rob, how much am I worth to you? And I'd be like, $20, 50 cents. And damn. You're like, okay, $20, 50 cents. Okay, that's a deal. So I would give you $20 to go enjoy for the year. And then after a year, I would kill you.
It sounds like the worst deal ever.
Well, you would owe me in the next life, too, probably. No, because you paid with your life, so. Well, it was only $20. Probably you got more than that.
Yeah, I was about
that.
To say.
$20 went a lot further back then.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
I don't even think they had the same
20
currency.
American yeah. dollars, they'd say.
Worth $20 to you? What the?
Ancient Celtic you is worth 20 American dollars, which is a lot of money to the Celts.
This you're like, this little piece of paper is worthless.
We never see a Jackson out here. Anyway, the other world of the Celts was a parallel world, much like this one where you would be reborn after death. This concept of rebirth is worked into the legends themselves, often tied to bodies of water or vessels for holding liquid. In Welsh lore, for example, there is the cauldron you can toss the sick or wounded into, and they will emerge restored. So step one, name your cauldron.
Step two.
Step two, dump your sick into the cauldron, and they will be well.
That must be a big cauldron.
Yeah, they're pretty big.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you better give it a big name. Hugo.
Hugo.
Another Bob's Burgers character.
Yeah.
Sorry.
where were we?
Hugo's the worst. He's the health inspector.
Oh, I
and
see.
And he's jealous of Bob because he was married, or he was engaged to Linda, and then Linda dumped him and then went and married Bob. Bob's Burgers is so good. And you missed my Bob's Burgers reference at the beginning, too. So,
the concept of rebirth is worked into the legends themselves, often tied to bodies of water or vessels for holding it. In the story of Cuculain, Terror walks into the lake, holding his own head, and emerges whole the next day. If you remember from our last episode, the giant Terror, the guy, he was a druid disguised as the Terror. He walked into the lake and came out, and then he said, okay, now it's my turn to lop your head off.
Yeah.
The Celtic-inspired King Arthur retrieves his sword from the Lady of the Lake, and as we mentioned, returns to her when he is mortally wounded. So you can see water recurring as this space of healing. Druids also function as historians. Each chieftain had a druid responsible for tracing his family genealogy. Cornelius Nepos was a Roman who wrote in Latin, but was born in Gaul in the fourth year of the reign of Augustus, and so was a native Celt. Nepos wrote a collection of biographies of prominent Roman and non-Roman individuals, as well as a world history. Ireland's first recorded historian, Sinlan Mocu Min, dates to around 600 AD. That's a long time ago. And Wales's historian, Nennius, dates to 800. Writing around 1100, the early British chronicler Geoffrey of Monmouth claimed that he had drawn on now-lost British Celtic histories in compiling his volumes. So no, they didn't write things down for a very long time. But as we got into Christianization, there are guys who identified as Celtic and came from Celtic regions who did write down histories.
Oh.
And these become important sources for the history of Britain, for example. But we don't have those anymore. We just have Monmouth's.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, what happened to those?
Same thing that happened to the Q source for the Bible. Gone. Just gone.
Vanished.
Vanished. Druids also functioned as poets and musicians, noted for their use of the pentatonic scale, as well as their regular contests in poetry and music. Both Irish and Welsh sources... Irish and Welsh
Irish
sources...
Irish wristwatch.
...describe druids performing the role of physician with both herb and surgery. They performed cesarean sections, amputations, and a form of brain surgery. Druids also functioned as poets and musicians, noted for their use of the pentatonic scale, as well as their regular contests in poetry and music. Both Irish and Welsh sources describe druids performing the role of physician as well, with both herbs and surgery. So look at all these jobs they're doing. They're historians, they're poets, they're doctors.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah. I don't know that every druid was everything.
I mean, there had to be someone.
They were like a class of people. So that if they were like, 20% or 25% of the whole population, you would specialize. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's cool.
There had to be someone. There had to be just one guy that was like, you know what? I'm going to do it all.
Do it all. Renaissance man. Way before the Renaissance. They perform C-sections, amputations, wow. and a form of brain surgery.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
No. No. And I don't want to. I think about it.
Ireland's Brehon laws held that only qualified doctors could treat the sick. Each doctor was required to train 4 medical students and was given time off to learn new medical techniques. Finally, hearkening back to the magical acts of the druidic characters in the tale of Cú Chulainn, druids functioned as powerful magicians. They carried a wand, a branch of tinkling bells, which was often used... which was often used by smacking or striking someone with it.
Even better.
So your wand was a tinkling branch that you smack people with to make magic things happen to them. You shall be healed.
That kind of happened in The Lion King.
Yeah, a little bit.
Rafiki had his stick that jingled. And he kept hitting Simba in the head with it.
Yeah. That's how it works. In both Irish and Welsh stories, druids had the power to raise a great fog to confuse and disperse their enemies. In the Welsh, 4 branches of the Mabinogi, which we're going to visit soon on this podcast, a druidic character causes an entire region to seem to vanish, leaving the heroes alone and forcing them to journey to Britain out of boredom. There's nothing around. Given the religious importance of water and its consequent link to the druids, they were said to be able to dry up wells or cause a stream to form by shooting an arrow into the air. They could cause people to change shapes, like Cúroy does in the Cú Chulainn tales. In the 4 branches, the same druid who causes all the people in the region to vanish also temporarily transforms an army of men and women into mice to devour a field of wheat. His wife, who is pregnant, is easily caught while in her mouse form, and when the hero threatens to hang her, the druid changes her back into her human shape by smacking her with a wand. So much of Western culture is intertwined with the ancient Celts and the druid caste, and I can honestly say that I have been very much taken with the beauty of Celtic culture, as has Julian, I suppose.
It's true.
I had always assumed that the Celts were exclusively Irish. The prominence of Celtic branding in American Irish gift shops and bars can be misleading in the United States. We tend to think, I guess that's who the Celts are, the Irish. An important part of my personal ancestry, however, is Welsh, a fact that I've never had much feeling about until I read about the Druids. And now I have as much of a claim on Celtic heritage as anyone, because the Welsh are just as Celtic as the Irish. In fact, the Celtic Empire stretched through Europe before the rise of the Romans, and Western society may have been better off if the Celts had managed to simply dispense with the Romans and the Greeks altogether when they had the chance. Romans and Greeks were, after all, far more conservative and controlling in the treatment of women, who were by and large regarded as property or second-class citizens. Romans were also far more violent, lacking any check on their warlike ways similar to that of the Celtic Druids. Let's not forget the gladiatorial arena, friends. Mm-hmm. It's worth noting that Greek and Roman mythology were far kinkier than the Celtic myths, suggesting a deep cultural repression by focusing on incest, bestiality, and punishment. The Celts, by contrast, had heroes who could be promiscuous, as Savannah has observed, but were far less likely, Savannah, to have sex with a bull, or their sister, or their mother. Or to be turned into a flower or a lion for when, how, or if they had sex with someone. So it's much less punishment around sex, for sure.
And I'm not suggesting that there should be. I was just saying that, you know, every time the hero does a good deed, he doesn't need to be gifted 300 women. But,
he wasn't. There was just, he'd gone mad, Savannah, and he needed some breasts to calm him down. He didn't get to have them. He just had to witness them. Listen to our last episode. If you didn't listen to our last episode, this is very confusing right now.
Yeah. No, but it was literally like every time he did a good deed, there was also a woman that was all like, yeah, I'll have sex with you now.
Leaving aside...
It just was, yeah.
Leaving aside any fantasizing about the Druids that has informed neo-paganism, and it sounds like a lot of actual historical detail has informed modern Druidism, a sober historical look at this class of intellectuals is in itself inspiring. These were a group of ancient people to be admired for their long years of study, careful thought, diplomatic skill, and metaphysical depth. know your druids, and know your Celtic myth, and seek to raise yourself to the wisdom of these ancients. We're going to do just that in subsequent episodes, but that's my final thought. Anything from you guys, other than your knowledge of how many breasts are and are not appropriate when stopping a frenzy?
I wouldn't say I know the right amount. I just feel like
now you're
300
thinking about it,
is too much.
It's too many.
Like one or two is fine.
But yeah, back to the history. Back to the history. Anything today that really stuck out?
It sounds really cool. Honestly,
you would be a Celt if given the choice. You would be a druid. You could be the druid who does all the poetry and stuff. Yeah. You could be the storyteller druid.
That kind of stuff sounds cool. I just am not organized religion in any sense, I think.
I wanted to be clear that, you know, Celts, that's just it's your ancestry or it's your heritage. Like, you're born a Celt, and then the druids were just a class within that.
Oh,
so
okay.
There were religious dimensions to it, but you could be a doctor druid rather than a priest druid. You see?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I still think it's so interesting, too, that they didn't really write any of this down. So, like, we have to speculate on it. But
until
it sounds like a really cool thing.
Yeah. Julian?
What do I want to say?
What stuck out? What were you most struck by? Was there anything new that you learned about druids?
No, and I think that's what struck me the most.
Is how much of it
is how much
your
was like,
druidism.
Oh yeah, I do this at home.
Yeah.
Or I did this with, you know, my coven.
So you guys read your histories, or somebody did when
somebody
they were
did.
Organizing all
yeah.
this. That's great. I'm glad to hear.
She was it's very weird because the druids are also very freeing people, but the neo druids I were in were very, very strict on like certain things.
Sure.
So it kind of is like that, but she our coven leader, I guess, she was very much like did her research and was actually from Ireland.
There you go.
So,
but it's not just the Irish.
It's not just the Irish. I'm Scottish.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
you guys are Celts. Scottish, Irish, and Welsh, Isle of Man, those are areas that really held on to their Celtic heritage longer.
Yeah.
And the Welsh and the Irish and the Scots have, the Welsh in particular and the Irish have a lot of mythology. The Scots as well have to some extent. But, you know, the longer the Celtic tradition was maintained without Christianization, the more Celtic culture informed what, you know, they became. All right, I hereby adjourn and declare closed this meeting of the Secret Order of Alchemical Actors until such a time as we get together and do it again. My name is Dr. Robert C. Thompson, your Supreme Hierophant, joined this day by Savannah Barrett, our Sister of the 84th Degree.
See you later.
And that resident druid Julian Dobbs.
Goodbye.
Next time here on Occult Confessions, we are going to take a trip down Mythology Lane with the legends of Rhiannon. Rings like a bell through the night, and wouldn't you love to love her here on Occult Confessions?